Done with frizz? Say goodbye to that poof. Repel humidity and tame those flyaways. One drop, frizz stops with John Frieda Frizzy Serum. Your hair talks and frizz never interrupts. John Frieda Frizzy Serum. One drop, frizz stops.
Only from John Frieda.
Want to make your blonde blonde? Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair two full shades to give you your best blonde every day. Your hair talks. Make a statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection. Only from John Frieda.
On this election day, you've made a great choice by listening to Locked On Grizzlies, and I've got something very fun for you today. We're going to talk about Fizdale's first misstep, at least by his own admission. We're going to have a 3Q preview of the Denver Nuggets and an in-depth conversation with one of the brightest strategic minds covering the Grizzlies, Andrew Ford. All of that on Election Day. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team.
Welcome in, Locked On Grizzlies, on this Election Day. I've already voted. Have you? Go out and make your voice heard. Remember, there may not always be a right choice, but in this election, there certainly is a wrong one. Coming up on the show, going to talk with Andrew Ford. And as I mentioned in the intro, he is one of the sharpest dudes out there, former assistant coach, a guy that understands the game in a way that a lot of guys can't because they haven't been involved in it like he has. So I really enjoyed our chat about a lot of different things, a lot of X's and O's stuff, a lot of nuts and bolts stuff. If you are into it and you're a junkie, you're going to really enjoy it, I think. That's coming up here in just a little bit. Also, going to talk a bit about the Nuggets. That should be a fascinating game tonight for those of you down at FedEx Forum who are skipping the election coverage to go and watch. But first, we start with Zach Randolph in the latest in the Zebo situation, and David Fizdale with some very interesting comments after practice today about his role and about what happened when Zach Randolph sat, not for the first time, but maybe for the most notable time, sat for the last 6 minutes or so of the Sunday loss to the Blazers.
The plan is I should have put him back in, and I'm kicking myself today for not playing him those last 3 minutes. There's nothing set in stone on who finishes the games. I just saw our lead disappear. I saw our defense really suffering. And so I went with my gut and said, J. Mike. But looking back at the film, I should have probably won Z-Bo. And that's just the reality of it. And, you know, Z-Bo and I talked about it. He understands that it's going to be nice that he finishes. It's going to be nice that he doesn't.
How much do you concern yourself at all, if at all, about how many minutes he plays? I mean, he only played 20 in that game. Does he?
Some nights it'll be 20. Some nights it'll be 30. You know, like I said, it's based on the game and the situation and what's working and what's not working. And last night, the rookie head coach fumbled, and I should have put him back in the game, and I didn't. And, you know, like I told him, it's definitely not from a lack of confidence because I got big confidence in him and what he can do and what he's proven that he can do. So I guarantee you that mistake won't happen again.
You'll hear Andrew and I discuss this coming up later on, but it is really a confounding thing for David Fizdale. He's got to work with Zach Randolph. Zach Randolph has a big influence in the locker room. He still is a big-time part of everything this team does, and those guys really respect him. And if you're not going to play him, that's okay, but it had better work or there had better be some more logic to it. And I think the point that Fizdale's trying to make there is that, you know, the idea of putting Zach back in there would have made some sense, even if you're willing to, you know, give up some defensive issues, give up some baskets. I mean, they didn't score. Yeah, they scored 6 points in the last 6 minutes or so of the game. Last 5.5 minutes, they made one basket, and that was an offensive rebound from Jermichael Green. They had no offense. They had no go-to. They had no flow. And so, you know, if that's the case, then if you leave Zach off and that happens, then you're going to have problems. It's not going to last. If he had been taken out of the game and the Grizzlies go crazy and they're free-flowing and the offense is moving and they score, you know, 20 points in the last 5 minutes and win that game, then no one can really say much. But they didn't, and so they can, and they did. Now, where we go from here is interesting. I do like the fact that Fizdale went right at it and admitted that he made a mistake, threw up his hands, said that he shouldn't have done it. I think that will be very well received in the locker room. A lot of guys, you know, like Mark Ivoroni, for example, made a lot of mistakes, but would never admit that he made a mistake. I think people are very willing to accept and forgive if guys are straightforward with it. And even if, you know, in this case, it's political and maybe Fizdale truly in his heart of hearts doesn't believe he made a mistake. Maybe he truly believes that the pick and roll disaster that Zach Randolph can be on defense is not something they can get around. But he knows he's got to get on the right side of these guys. He knows that change that the organization probably is okay with implementing as far as pushing Zach Randolph back a little bit and minimizing his role in those situations. You know, Fizdale knows that that's not something that happens quickly. You don't snap your fingers and have that happen. So if he has to suck it up here in the short term, then I think the fact that he's willing to do that shows that he understands this team and that he is a confident man, but he is not an overly prideful one. And I think that's going to serve him well as a head coach. Before we do the 3Q preview for the Nuggets game tonight, let me remind you that the best place to get tickets for that game is SeatGeek. The SeatGeek app, get it on your phone, get it on your iPad, get it wherever you use your devices, and all you have to do is go to the App Store, download it, and you're good to go. Once you get it, by the way, put that promo code LOGRIZZLIES in to save yourself $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's LOGRIZZLIES. It saves you $20, and it supports the pod, lets them know that you're listening and that you came from here. I would really appreciate that. You'll appreciate it, too, because the prices are already guaranteed to be as good as you can get because SeatGeek does all the hard work for you. They do all the grunt work. Why do you want to go to 7, 8, 9-plus ticket sites and check around and double-check and triple-check and cross-check and see which ones are the best? No, SeatGeek does all that stuff for you. And with their exclusive algorithm, they can look at the pricing and tell you in real time whether it's a good price based on the market, an okay price, bad price. They've got color codes and numbers right there that tell you exactly what kind of deal you're getting. There's no doubt that you're going to find the deal that you want because they make it that easy. It's the SeatGeek app. Download it. Put in promo code LOGRIZZLIES and you'll save $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Get the SeatGeek app. Get those tickets that you need. Enjoy yourself and save money with SeatGeek. All right, time for a quick 3Q preview of the matchup with the Denver Nuggets. Nuggets are 3-3 coming off of their best performance by far this year, a win in Boston. It's no easy thing to do. They knocked out the Celtics 123-107 on Sunday with a fantastic performance. Emmanuel Mudiay with by far his best game as a professional came out of the gate flying. Nuggets scored 42 points in the first quarter of that game, scored 77 in the first half as they completely blitzed the Celtics and played really well. And in particular, they did so with Wilson Chandler coming in at the power forward spot alongside of Nurkic. He played in that role for a good bit in the first half, and it was a dominating performance. He scores 22 points, was a plus 26 in 25 minutes in that ball game. He was a real game changer as a power forward, that stretch four that has given teams problems, gave the Grizzlies fits last year. Now, Chandler is listed as questionable for this ball game, but as you know, the Grizzlies have listed lots of guys as questionable. I think Mike Conley is technically listed as questionable in the ballgame as well, and he's certainly going to play. I'm guessing Chandler's going to play. Will Barton, for you Tiger fans out there, Barton has been out. He missed that game against Boston. He'll miss the game tonight against the Grizzlies as well. So no Barton, but the Nuggets are playing their best basketball. And they will throw out lineups with lots and lots of shooting. And they bring Kenny Faried off the bench, you know, to do some of the things, you know, differently, you know, his role. But he was a starter just like Zach Randolph was, and now he's a bench guy just like Zach Randolph is. Which brings me to question number one of the 3Q preview. And for those that don't know, the 3Q means three questions. We do three questions about the matchup tonight. So, number one, what will the rotations look like now with all the Zach stuff that you just heard in the last segment? What does that mean for the close? What does it mean for Zach's minutes? You heard David Fizdale talking to Ron Tillery and saying that he says, you know, Zach will play some nights 20, some nights 30. Will it be a 30-minute night just to kind of make up for what happened on Sunday. And can Zach handle that? If the Nuggets are going to play Chandler as a four, particularly off the bench in situations where Zach would probably be out there, can Zach be out there? Can he go? And if the Nuggets are going to play Moutier and Harris, and Gary Harris started at the two-guard spot, and then they brought in Jameer Nelson as well quite a bit. Yeah, they really were playing with two ball handlers almost all the time. That brings me to question number two. Will Andrew Harrison be able to hold down the fort? I mean, this is something that David Fizdale discussed a little bit at practice yesterday, and I'll let you hear from him with regards to the backup point guard situation.
You know, I gave Wade a six-game stretch to look at him, and now Andrew's within his stretch right now. He's doing some things well. He's doing some things poorly, you know, which I expect from these guys. You know, I don't think you know your team until about after 20 games. And so we'll go back and forth and see what works best for us, and you know, we'll figure it out as we go.
So this is the six-game run for Andrew Harrison, I guess. If Wade Baldwin got his six games and he didn't play on Sunday, I'm guessing it will be similar tonight. He probably won't play. You may also have to see more two-point guard lineups from the Grizzlies as well, depending on what happens with Tony Allen and how he feels. He banged up his hip a little bit in the game on Sunday, and you know he's getting older, and a lot of times those injuries will linger a little bit for Tony. So, and you may also see, just from a strategic standpoint, the Grizzlies need a little more ball handling out there. And Harrison, the one thing he can do is play on-ball defense. Now, he's not necessarily great off the ball. Got caught ball watching a lot. You know, got backdoored a few times. But he's at least a pretty consistent on-ball defender. And you can have him out there in those lineups. They're going to need him. They're going to need him because the Nuggets do have quite a few guards that can get after it. And if Moutier is going to play anything close to like he did on Sunday, that's going to put real pressure on Mike Conley to handle him. Final question. Will Chandler Parsons make a basket? If you bought your ticket Sunday hoping to see Chandler Parsons make his first basket as a Grizzly, I am so sorry you didn't see that. Will you see it tonight? Sure. Of course you will, right? Can't be any worse than he was on Sunday. I do think, yeah, I asked that to kind of, you know, keep an eye on him. He still has a big minutes restriction. And I don't think he really hits his stride. He didn't hit his stride for Dallas until after the restriction was lifted a little bit. Because he was on I don't know if it was the exact same restriction, but it was a similar restriction coming off of his initial knee injury last year for the Mavericks. And, you know, he didn't play all that well when he was restricted. And once it came off, he played a lot better. That's probably something that will continue. I don't know that he's going to necessarily play all that well. He may feel a little extra pressure to get a lot going. His restriction on Sunday was 5 minutes per quarter. It may be a little expanded or changed for tonight's game, but that's what it was then. I think he felt like he kind of had to push it when he was in there. That is not surprising. He hadn't played in 7 months. I don't know that he's going to all of a sudden be right back to normal, but I think he'll be better tonight. And I do think, yes, he's going to make a basket as the Grizzlies try to claw themselves back to 500 with a win against the Nuggets tonight. We shall see. Coming up after the break, you'll hear my interview with Andrew Ford. Joining me now on Locked On Grizzlies is a guy that you should certainly follow on Twitter if you do not, and read if you do not. His name is Andrew Ford. He is at AndrewFord22 on Twitter. Andrew is a alum of the University of Tennessee, as am I, which is nice. He was also part of Bruce Pearl's staff over at Tennessee on the on the side where you analyzing and breaking things down video wise. And now, Andrew writes all over the place, including for, SBN Grizzlies, Grizzly Bear Blues, Upside Motor, Today's Fast Break. You've written in a lot of different spots. So that's why I tell you everyone just to follow Andrew, because, there are very few guys out there that can break down X's and O's for the Grizzlies like Andrew can on a regular basis. So please, check out his stuff. And Andrew, I appreciate you joining me here on the pod. How are you? Man, I'm doing great. And we have a lot to get to, because this has been, let's just say, an uneven start. And it makes sense for the Grizzlies, right? I mean, you know, with the personnel issues that they've had and the fact that, you know, they're working in Chandler Parsons into the mix and Tony Allen had to be worked into the mix. And you've got some sort of minutes restriction possibly on Marc Gasol, who the hell knows, and Mike Conley. You know, you still don't have Brandon Wright. There are lots of challenges. Have you seen so far, just overall, before we get into some of the specifics, is this about what you would have expected from the Grizzlies, or is it a little above, below average? Where are you at?
This is about what I expected, honestly. I think this team is going to be about 500 come December, and that's about – I mean, that meets my expectations, honestly. It's hard to really say what this team is going to be at the end of the season because, as you mentioned, there's just so many personnel issues. Guys aren't playing with who they would be playing with if everyone was healthy. And, you know, you never know if you're going to get everybody healthy, but you hope that the Grizzlies will, and you hope things will work out that way. And then you'll start to be able to tell more about what this team can be and if they can reach that ceiling that some people thought they might have before the season.
With a coaching eye, the kind of eye that you would have used when you were on staff, what do you see X's and O's wise? Let's start on the offensive side from the Grizzlies. Under David Fizdale, the things that he wants to do, accepting that there are some limitations with personnel at this point?
I think he's still been pretty bland, honestly, so far. He's had a few good ATO plays, after timeout plays. He had one yesterday against Portland for Vince, that Vince came off of double down screens and spotted up on the three-point line and got a quick hit and three-pointer. So he's got a few of those tricks in his belt, and that's nice to see because Jaeger was decent at those things. You know, also it's, you see on the offensive end, you see a lot of high pick and roll, which is not unlike what we've seen in the past. You see Randolph and Gasol setting those high screens, except now you see more pops than we've ever seen in the past rather than hard rolls. And that's kind of an interesting aspect because not only does that change what the bigs are doing, but that changes what everybody else on the floor is doing. So when you're playing four out, one in, that way, it provides a lot more space for the guards. And I think one thing I've noticed is that Conley certainly seems to have some space and some wiggle room that he hasn't always had. Cause sometimes when the guy rolls so hard, teams know it's coming. That's been the Grizzlies' MO for so long that they can just sit back in the paint. Now it's hard to do that, especially as teams are starting to have to respect Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph being able to shoot threes. So, one thing I like in particular on the high pick and rolls where, let's say, Marc Gasol pops to the perimeter after setting the screen is when Conley drives, then he's got that swing pass available to him to the opposite corner. And that was so muddy before where, you know, you've got Randolph and Gasol mm-hmm. down low. And that swing pass is really hard to make over two guys and their defenders. And now, you know, Conley can see that pass in the opposite corner and he can hit him and then it goes boom, boom. And if you have to, you can skip it back to the opposite corner. And hopefully that'll provide some better looks from three that we haven't seen in the past years. And, certainly better schemes to create better threes will be, essential to this team's success.
Well, that is one thing that so far, you know, this team is shooting as we speak right now, Andrew. Just under 40% for the year as a team, which is not great by any stretch of the imagination. 39.9% to be exact. But the one area where they have, had success is, those corner threes. And, you know, whether it's often Jermichael Green, you know, with the starting unit, on some of the actions that you're talking about with those high screens that opens up. And then with help coming over rotations, you get a team into rotation. And whether it's just one pass or whether it's two, you end up with that corner three. Is that sustainable, particularly when you add Chandler Parsons to the mix, even taking into account Tony Allen's not ideal spacing situation that he provides out there?
I think it's workable. I think what you have to do though is you're going to have to position Tony Allen on the strong side. So you're going to have to position him on the side that the ball handler drives on. That way, his man can help down. But Conley is not going that way anyway. He's really trying to get into the middle. And that guy, even though Tony Allen is not a sharp shooter, that guy is typically not going to completely leave him and just, you know, right, lock down on Conley. So Conley should still be able to skip the ball across to the opposite corner. And then from there, you just work it around until you find an open shot. It's just quick hitting passes once it gets to the opposite corner, because once it gets to that corner, that's when the defense is scrambling and that's when they're closing out. And if you just beat one closeout after another, then of course the defense is out of alignment, and hopefully that'll lead to a good shot.
Do you think that the propensity to pop rather than roll is good for Marc Gasol at this point?
I think it's good for his longevity. I don't know that it's his best use at the moment. I think, you know, you certainly still want to mix in a good dose of rolls, but it just for his body, for his legs, for his ankles, whatever you want to say about it, it certainly seems like it would be a good thing for his health. And also he's, you know, he's adept enough that he can actually attack off of closeouts. He is not very explosive, but I think we'll start to see, as guys have to start respecting his shot, some of these bigs are going to close out, and he's just a little more nimble than them for a 7-footer, and he'll be able to get to the paint, and that's a wonderful thing with his passing vision. He'll either be able to finish lightly at the rim, or he'll be able to pick his spot and find somebody else who's open, I think.
Yeah, I joked with Mark about that whole thing like a few weeks ago, when he was going to finally start getting closeouts, and sure enough, yes, at the game yesterday, or day before, I guess, the Portland game, you know, Mason Plumlee goes out and closes out hard on Mark at the 3-point line, and all of a sudden now he can take it and drive. He dribbles in and he draws a foul. At some point, that's going to end in a dunk, some kind of a two-hand hammer, something like that. I think it's going to happen. I don't know if he's quite nimble enough to do some of the moves that you see from guards that get those closeouts, but he could certainly pass, and he's fleet of foot for a big man.
Right, and really all you need him to do is beat his man by a step or two, because then that makes other guys have to cheat towards him, and that'll at least open up passing lanes if he can't get all the way to the rim himself. So it's creating positive actions off of that one or two dribbles he would execute on a closeout, I think.
I think you're right about that. Do you think, from the offensive standpoint, because we need to talk about Zach Randolph, I think that's kind of the elephant in the room right now for the Grizzlies, just how to deal with Zach. He's such a big personality. You know, he's such a big part of the DNA of the team and the city and all of that. But, you know, I wrote about it last week, and you've talked about it a lot. You know, he is on offense right now against second team guys. He's killing them. I mean, he's really, really good. He still has all those tricks, all those moves. There's most second team, you know, fours and fives don't have any way of handling what he can do on the post, and he can still, you know, face up and hit that jump shot. It's still, all the tricks are still there, but he's so bad defensively now that it's almost like you got to work around him. So if you're Fizdale, how do you maximize Z-Bo? What do you do here?
Like you said, that I think that is the toughest question to answer about this current version of the Grizzlies. I think that, of course, you need Z-Bo in the game as much as possible offensively, just because, I mean, he's been a monster, and particularly, like you said, he's just eating second units alive on offensive rebounds, on face-ups. I mean, the length and the skill of second unit players really is such that they can't read Zach like first teamers can, and he takes advantage of that. But defensively, and we've talked about this before, I just don't know what you can do. Right now, it seems like Fizdale is having him, you know, hedge high and try to recover, but that's not really in Zach's wheelhouse. He's not a nimble guy. That's not really his forte. But also, if you have him sit back in the paint, kind of wait on the pick and roll to develop and, you know, see where the ball goes, if the ball handler goes to the rim or if he ends up hitting the roll man, well, Randolph's not really quick enough there either. The guy's typically just going to blow by him. So there's no great way to do this. I think you could mix in some blitzes on the pick and roll where the guy just has to get the ball out of his hands and he has to pass to the big on the perimeter, and the big's that Zach's guarding is typically a guy who's not going to be able to handle the ball that well, because Fizdale does try to hide him on guys like that. So you could blitz the pick and roll a little more, but that's a low usage thing. I mean, you don't really want to get into doing that a ton. I mean, I bring that up because Fizdale and Spoelstra, they did a lot of blitzing the pick and roll in Miami. But of course, that's when they have right, LeBron James right, and Dwayne yeah, Wade. That's a little bit different than having Zach Randolph blitz the pick
yeah,
and roll.
Yeah, Chris Bosh is
but
a little
still,
better.
I think
that,
you,
yeah.
Right. I think you could see some elements of that, but I don't know how you fully compensate for his inability defensively, but of course it's almost like you just have to platoon him. I mean, you just have to pick and choose your spots in the game where you're okay with him giving up points. And that's hard to do because you never know when the other team's going to go on a run.
We talked about, you know, the scheme and stuff, like, is it a mindset thing, like, where you have to, as a team, have a one particular or two particular things that you want to do with pick and roll, irrespective of who's out there? Because you've got teams, and they've always done this, but now more than ever, whoever Randolph's man is, you know, boom, you screen with him and you put Randolph in pick and roll all day long. If you're doing that, can you have a thing that's specifically for Zach and then something for everybody else, or do you kind of have to be consistent across the board?
No, I think you can kind of cater a little bit, and I think, you know, right now you do see a little bit of catering because, you know, when Gasol's in the pick and roll, he's not doing what any of the other bigs are doing in the pick and roll. He's sitting back and waiting and doing what he was best at when he won his Defensive Player of the Year award a couple years ago, and that's really where he needs to be. It just doesn't make sense for him to hedge high because you want him at the rim. You want him to be able to block shots or at the very least just protect the rim and create havoc there. But I think there are things you can do off the ball to help Randolph. I don't know how much you can help him on the ball if they just isolate him in the pick and roll, but the weak side rotations are going to have to get tighter. You're going to have to dig down a little more in your three off ball defenders. It's just, you've got to do some little tinkering like that to just make it a little bit harder for them to squeeze into the paint. Because right now, I mean, often the Grizzlies look really bad at just letting guys blow right around them and getting right to the rim. And often you see, you look up and it's Zach Randolph right at the front and center there. And I don't know who needs to be that guy, though, who needs to be able to crash down at the last minute and really help off of his man. We saw that happen yesterday against Portland. There were guys trying to do that, but the problem is Portland's a good three-point shooting team, and when you get that, you get kind of what I'm talking about on the pick and roll where you kick it to the opposite corner, and then it's just moving around, and then they get a wide-open three, and you're dead.
I agree with you. Like, the rotations, when the Grizzlies get put into a rotation situation, they have been, I mean, they certainly in the Portland game were really bad, but that's kind of been par for the course. You know, when it's been a more traditional, you know, defensive looks, then they're still okay, but they've been put into scramble mode, you know, quite a bit more. Is that a mindset when you have teams that are like, if you're inconsistent, or if you're not necessarily familiar, or you're kind of iffy on what the plan is, does that affect you when you get put into these scramble modes, when you have to improv a little bit out there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're just not sure where your assignment is exactly. And the Grizzlies are a team very set in their ways. I think they're very used. They've played with each other so long that they know their traditional assignments. And it just seems like Fizdale's trying to change some of that up. And I think that's honestly a good thing, but I don't think it's taken yet. I don't think the players have really reacted too well to it just yet. And for whatever reason, and maybe it's just they're still working around to it, and hopefully that'll pick up a little bit as you get more guys like Parsons and Tony Allen back in the lineup regularly. But I do think that if you're just put in scramble mode, for instance, I talk about not knowing assignments. I saw two different plays yesterday where two guys closed out on the same perimeter shooter. I mean, that's not, that's just something that can't happen. And I don't know how that happened. I would have to go back and watch, but that's just something that you clearly don't know your assignment. I mean, I think guys are kind of, I think Fizdale's kind of been trying to play a matchup zone where you're manning the strong side and zoning the weak side, and I just don't think that much of this personnel is used to doing that. So they're still in catch-up mode, and they're having to overcompensate because they're not sure exactly where they need to be.
I will tell you, I don't think, just based on what I know of this team and having covered them for a long time, I don't know that their appetite for a matchup zone is going to be real high. I don't think their appetite for too much what they would consider gimmicky stuff is too high. I think there's still a lot of pride on this team and a lot of thought that they can do things more conventionally and get away with it. But I ask you, Andrew, is that true? With the personnel they've got right now, with Mark, and Mark can still play center field with the best of them. He was still very vocal. What people may not have seen on the broadcast, if you just watched it on TV, during all those reviews, there were a couple different long reviews in that Portland game. Mark was, like, talking with the young bigs and explaining things, and you could see him, like, you know, gesturing and really, like, teaching on the floor some of those things that we're talking about. But can they, with this group, do those conventional things, or do they have to be either more aggressive or a little more gimmicky if they're going to really stop the very best teams?
I think they have to swallow their pride and be a little more gimmicky. I don't think they have to be gimmicky to the point of, I mean, Fizdale, I forget what game this was, but they were almost playing a 2-3 zone.
He's done it on twice, two different games. He's done 2-3 zones, especially with Zach out there.
That's like, I don't know, that's about as gimmick as you get for NBA defense. I don't know that it needs to be that level, but, I mean, you're going to have to play some matchup zones, and you're going to have to kind of pick your poison. I mean, when you've got guys out there like Damian Lillard and McCollum, just to use yesterday's game as an example, it's just, it makes sense for you to match up and have, you know, two defenders playing man on the strong side, and then you've got your three guys kind of sagging closer to the paint to help. Cause those are their best attacking players. It makes sense, and you see more and more teams doing it. I don't understand why it would be, you know, why there would be that much kickback to it. I mean, you see, it's not entirely dissimilar to what Tom Thibodeau's teams have done over the years. And I mean, obviously we know his defensive prowess and record. It might be hard to get these guys to buy in, but maybe it's just going to take some results for them to buy in. But that's difficult, because how do you get the results without the buy-in?
And honestly, you go back to last year and year before, and I mean, this team has had trouble with rotations then. It wasn't as if this was like a first-time thing.
I don't think
Zach is not getting better at defense. He's getting worse. But you know, this whole team, I mean, I remember, you know, the game that really precipitated Zach going to the bench in the first place was the game against the Hornets, when they shot like 30 some odd threes and made, you know, 14 or 15 of them or whatever it was, and the Grizzlies lost at home by 20 or 25. This was like mid-December of last year. I mean, that wasn't anything new or gimmicky or anything like that. That was just a team that was not locked in defensively.
Right.
I still think this team feels like they can switch it on and off sometimes.
Right. At some point, it's not a scheme thing. There are only so many complicated rotations you can have. And at a base level, the rotations are really not that difficult if you're all aligned. And I think they can get that way, like you said, when they flip on that switch. You just, right now, it's just not flipped on that regularly.
That's, as a coach, I'm sure, very frustrating, because you have to figure out how to flip that switch, how to figure out what motivates guys. I also think as a coach it's frustrating. I mean, the Zach Randolph thing, I have a lot of sympathy, as you mentioned, with David Fizdale, because it really is, it's difficult. I mean, there's a lot of outward pressure from fans. There's a lot of, you know, he's a big dog on the team, man. So if he's not happy, then that's going to filter through with the locker room. That's not an easy spot for Fizdale as a new coach to be in. This is a big thing that he bit off a lot when he bit off this thing, but it has to be addressed. Now I wonder, because I think, Andrew, like, my thought is, I've always said this year the development of Deontay Davis is really critical, you know, not only for the long-term future of the franchise, because I think they haven't really had a player like him or that profiles like him in a long time at that spot, but particularly if you could fast-track him somehow and make him just competent enough at weak side shot blocking and covering up some of that ground that opens up behind a hard hedging but slow moving Zebo, then you could maybe get away with Zach on defense. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think that's crazy. I think he is the best candidate for that because he's agile, he's quick, and he's very long. I think you've got guys like Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin. They do their best, but there's only so much they can do at 6'8", 6'9", and you know, not, you know, they're just, they don't have that length and they don't have that presence. They don't have that mindset around the rim that Deonta Davis has. I mean, he's going to go get the ball, whether that's a rebound or a block. It's just in his, it's in his mindset. And I know that's a bit of a scouting cliche, but there are certain guys who are just more wired that way. And I think he is that way. It's just, I don't know how you use him. If we could fast track him, that'd be great. I do think Fizdale's going to have to put him on the court and have to let or make him, you know, swim or sink. And that's certainly how you have to deal with rookies and young guys. You have to just throw them out there a little bit at least and just let them learn from their mistakes on the fly. And I think the Grizzlies will be a better team if they for that, if Fizdale is to go that route and try to throw Davis in that way and just have him sink off of his man in the corner. And I think it would cover up a lot of the pick and roll mistakes. I mean, you're still going to have guys getting to the rim easy if Randolph is in the pick and roll because you can't bring a third guy over to that action. So they're going to get to the rim, but like you said, you just have to have a guy there who can stand up to that. And, you know, maybe Davis is that guy anyway, because maybe he's a guy who at the very least you're not afraid to let him give up fouls. Because you have other people waiting.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, he can be aggressive. If he's out there, you can he can go crazy and just let him get out there and do his thing. I mean, like, it's not easy. And this is where we get into, like, that season win prediction stuff, because I was a little more bearish on the Grizzlies, so to speak, than a lot of people were. You know, I have them at 41, and I don't think they make the playoffs. And this is the kind of the reason why, because I think you get into the course of the season and there's so many of these kinds of decisions that you have to make. Like, if we're going to play Zach Randolph more, we need to develop a guy that can be an athletic rim protecting big alongside of him. Well, the only guy that really profiles like that is Deonta Davis, which means he's going to make some mistakes and there we have problems. Backup point guard is another example. If you're going to play a backup point guard, right now you got to play Wade Baldwin or Andrew Harrison or, God help us, Tony Allen at the backup position. I mean, that's there's really not anyone else that can handle that situation. I guess if Chandler Parsons gets healthy enough to play, maybe you could have him be a secondary ball handler and do some James Ennis. I don't know. You could do something. But really, at this point, it's Baldwin or Harrison that get those minutes. So, like, doesn't that mean that people have to temper their expectations at least for the first few weeks? Because, like, I don't see a good solution to too many of these issues with the young players.
It does, but that's very hard for fans to do, obviously. And, of course, you see, you know, a lot of this stuff going around at the beginning of the season where people were, some at least, were projecting the Grizzlies to maybe be a top four Western Conference team. So when somebody puts that out there, fans remember that because fans want to think about the ceiling. I mean, they don't want to think about the floor. So it's just, I do think fans need to temper their expectations. And I think Fizdale is in an unenviable position in that, I mean, this isn't the same team. I mean, I know Jaeger dealt with a lot of injuries and stuff, and but it's just, this is the year that they have to start evolving. They have to start becoming more modern, and there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You can't just continue. You didn't sign Mike Conley to a long deal, and you didn't sign Marc Gasol to a long deal to just continue on the same trajectory you're on, because I don't think that's the proper way to do it. I think you've got to make some adjustments, and the only way to do that is to do some experimenting, and experimenting might mean losses in the near future. And hopefully that means more wins later down the road, but that's a tough trade-off to sell to fans.
It's very tough. I also wonder, do they need to be a little less aggressive when it comes to crashing? Because, like, right now, if I look at their numbers, and let me pull it up here so I can give you the latest. So opponents are outscoring the Grizzlies on fast break points by 17-8. So they're +9 opponents are against the Grizzlies on fast breaking. I noticed that the Grizzlies, you know, have about a 25% offensive rebounding percentage. So, you know, typically the Grizzlies are pretty good at hitting the glass, and that does help when you have some pretty muddy offensive possessions. But it also seems to me that through some bonehead turnovers and some other, you know, styles of play, they're giving up a lot in transition, especially with the slow nature of some of their bigs. Do they need to be a little more cautious in that regard?
I think they do. I think, again, with personnel, maybe it's just something that's almost not really feasible, but I do think they need – that's something I've actually – I wrote notes last night, and I think that's something that they need to work on. It's the transition defense is just awful right now. It's just – the early offense coming from other teams is just killing the Grizzlies. And it's a matter of you can't have that many people down low who aren't ready to be the safety valve when the ball inevitably gets turned over or it bounces hard off the rim. And then you've got teams that can push the ball, and the Grizzlies are not, I mean, they're still not a quick team. I mean, they've got some more athleticism this year, but as a whole, they're not that quick of a team. They're slower moving, and you've got to do something to compensate for that. And I do think that starts with, let's not be so aggressive on the offensive boards, guys. I mean, maybe if you, once Fizdale's able to implement a little bit crisper of an offense, hopefully when the starters all get back healthy, maybe that'll solve some of the issues, and then you can afford to crash the boards a little less. Right now, I'm not sure you can really do that because the offense, like I said, is still fairly bland, and there are still a lot of ugly possessions that end in offensive boards and fouls.
There are too many of those. How long do you think it'll take to integrate Chandler Parsons into the mix properly?
I give it about a month. And I get that that's a while. I think the most important thing is you're just going to have to allow him to play himself back into game shape. I think if you watched him yesterday, you could see, well, I mean, he can still do some of the same stuff he does, but he just looks a step slow right now. He just doesn't look like he's got that game speed and like he's just flowing through the motions like he was before his injury. So you're going to have to give him some time there. And, of course, this is really the first time they will have had to work on the scheme with him involved. And I think there were certainly some times yesterday on the offense where he's out there where you get a guy like Marc Gasol who's actually, like, pushing him in the direction he needs to go, because I think he's a little confused, at least right now it seems, about where exactly he's supposed to fit on the offense. So I think it's going to take a little longer than some might think, but I give it about a month.
There's a lot more to it, and as you point out, I do like, you know, just to get into some of the specifics. I liked in the game Sunday against Portland how you would see Chandler Parsons out there with Zach Randolph, and he would kind of load up on that ball side when Zach was in the post and forced that man to make a determination about, you know, they love to double team Zach in that situation. He's not the greatest passer in the world out of the double team. He's better, and he's gotten better over the years, but he's not, you know, he's not Marc Gasol. But when you force the guy to make that decision, you know, Parsons got a couple good looks out of that, and he got a couple of good closeouts too, where he could dribble and then he can play make off of that. Is that an action that you like?
Oh, I love that. That's something that's simple, that's sustainable. You can execute it about the same every time because there's just not a lot of complex action involved. As long as your spacing's good on the weak side, that's really something I like. Just having, like you said, particularly on the closeouts, that opens up even more. I mean, once he beats the closeout, he's really got a 2-on-1 with him and Zach against one defender. And, that's a situation you'll take every single day, every single time. So that is something that I would like to see more of. I would also like to see him handle the ball a little more. I think right now that's not really what he's going to be doing as he's working back into the offense. I think you'll still see a combination of Conley and Harrison and or Baldwin handling the ball for the most part. But I do think you'll see a lot more ball handling from Parsons as the season moves forward.
I'm curious, from your scouting eye looking around the league, it does seem we've seen some surprises. We've seen some different types of you know, I don't know that. There have been some teams like the Lakers, for example, that really are surprisingly good, and you know, some teams that you didn't expect to see jumping up there, and I think some play too that we haven't necessarily seen. Are there, like, from what you see from the Grizzlies, do you worry or do you think that some of these younger teams, the Nuggets have been off to kind of a rough start. We'll see tonight as the Grizzlies play the Nuggets what happens there. The Wolves, we've already seen them quite a bit. You know, if you're a Grizzly fan, you've seen plenty of them. Do you worry that the Grizzlies might slip a little bit or that some of these teams are a little more ahead of schedule?
Oh, I do worry about that. I think, like you mentioned, the Lakers, the Timberwolves, I mean, they've got a plethora of young talent, and that's something the Grizzlies don't have. They have, you know, more talent. They're playing more young talent than they have in the past, but they're still a slow-evolving team. Some of these others, it's just they've been bad, so they've just had to retool with youth. And eventually you got to think that's going to catch up to Memphis. It's just there's only so many years that you can just bring in stopgaps. And, I mean, Chandler Parsons isn't a stopgap when he's healthy. I mean, he's very, very right. good. But, you know, I mean, you get the point. It's there's only so much you can bring in one or two guys and completely tweak the system to become better, and in the meantime you've got all these young guys who are growing together year after year, and you know they're spry every year, and that does catch up with the Grizzlies, especially as they're an aging unit. And you got to think eventually that they're going to have to do something more than what they're doing now, but that's why you hope they are proactive about the development of young guys like Baldwin and Deonta Davis, because maybe that, you know, slows that curve a little bit.
Is there anything that you would like to see the Grizzlies do offensively or defensively that they're not doing?
Offensively, I'd like to see it's pretty simple, but you see a lot of pick and roll action from them, and the high pick and rolls are okay, but they're not crisp right now. I'd like to see a little more low pick and roll action. I'd like to see it around, I'd like to see it around the low block, kind of like a reverse pick and roll. It's almost like Conley will curl off of Gasol and then he'll receive the ball and then they do a short roll from there. And that it's more quick hitting than the traditional pick and roll where it's dribble, dribble, dribble. And then, you know, the screen's coming. And stuff like that, it's just, you just would like to see some of that quicker hitting action from the Grizzlies, whether that's, it's that or, and I'd like to see some more early offense too. It's difficult given the personnel right now, and maybe that's a thing that the second unit will be able to accomplish for the Grizzlies as the year goes on, but it's just, you'd like to see them get in a flow a little sooner. You still see a little too much just dribbling out at the top of the perimeter until you get to about 15 or 14 seconds. And honestly, that's just too late. You've got to be able to do something before then, particularly when you don't have great movement on the wing, on the weak side, like the Grizzlies haven't. And, defensively, I think you just have to keep plugging along, doing the best you can with Randolph. I think you've got to get your guys to communicate better, though. You've got to get them to communicate that pick and roll coverage. You can't have guys high hedging and then nobody recovering to the big. You can't have those poor rotations that you leave 3-point shooters wide open. It just, that kind of stuff can't happen. So you'd like to see just a little more crispness from the current stuff they're doing. I don't think they need massive adjustments to scheme or anything. I think it's just the effort and the ability to lock in needs to be, that level needs to be raised a little bit.
I think that's a fair point, especially given the fact that 30% of shots around the league so far have been threes, which was the highest proportion so far in league history. So you better be good on your rotations, because teams are moving the ball very well, and everybody's got at least three shooters. Most teams have four, and some have five on the court at any given time. So there's no escape. If you can't, they will find, and teams can move the ball fast enough, they'll find your weak spot, and somebody's going to be able to hit the three to take advantage of it. Last thing for you, Andrew, I appreciate so much your patience and your time. If you had to upgrade one area, so like if you can only pick one area for the Grizzlies to upgrade right now, whether it's via trade or signing or whatever, what would you upgrade and who would you target?
You know, I have really haven't studied a lot of trades yet, but I know that I would target a two guard. I just think that there's only so much you can do when Tony Allen is playing a majority of the minutes at that position. And eventually you're going to have a guy play next to Conley who can create some for himself and be the backcourt partner he needs offensively. And so if I'm the Grizzlies front office, I'm definitely going and making calls and, you know, trying to find a quality two guard. I mean, it doesn't have to be, they don't have to be amazing. I mean, cause you think about the pieces the Grizzlies have. They've got Conley. He's very good when healthy. Gasol, very good when healthy. Parsons, same thing with him. And then you can throw Jermichael Green in. He's going to scrap hard. He's going to play hard. He's fine. I don't think he's a problem. But then you throw in a guy like Tony Allen and that can throw a wrench in things because you still are dealing with the same offensive problems that you've dealt with in the past. And right now, it just doesn't seem like they have a guy that they can play in Tony Allen's place a ton that will be able to fix those issues. I mean, maybe eventually you could play Wade Baldwin a little bit at the two, but I mean, he's not ready for that right now.
I think that's interesting. So the two guard spot is where you would upgrade, and there's a classic extra big for two guard. Somewhere that's the template of a trade that I think a lot of Grizzly fans have looked for. I do wonder around the league if there are any spare two guards to be had, because I think
there aren't.
there's an awful lot of bigs that are out there that are kind of superfluous because of the style changes, and anyone that can shoot and ball handle is like in super high supply. High demand, I should say.
I don't know that it's doable, but we've seen the Grizzlies front office work magic before, but I just, like you said, two guards, you look at them and, you know, when you rank them and stuff like that, you start to realize, wow, like there's really not that many even the ones who traditionally you wouldn't see as that high of quality. I mean, they're sought after pretty highly just because, like you said, the way the schemes are going and the way you're asking players to position themselves on the court at this point.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting indeed. I appreciate it, Andrew. Thank you very much for taking the time. Again, everyone should follow Andrew on Twitter. Is that the best way to go? Because you've got your stuff is kind of all over the place, so I want to make sure people can read what you don't just write about the Grizzlies. You focus on the Grizzlies a lot, but you don't just write about the Grizzlies. You write about the draft and prospects too.
Right. I write about draft prospects. Sometimes I'll cover some other teams, just depending on what needs to be done on the other sites I write for outside of Grizzly Bear Blues. But yeah, the best way to find my work is on Twitter. I would say I try to share everything I do there, and you know, you can always reach out and ask if you're trying to find something.
There you go. Andrew, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Thank you once again for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you want to shoot me an email about the show, or if you want to find out more about advertising on this podcast, please feel free to email me whatever you want, peter@peteredmiston.com. That's peter@peteredmiston.com. Follow me on Twitter @peteredmiston. Check me out every morning, 7 to 10. Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 87.7 FM. Read me in the commercial appeal in the numbers game each and every week. Thanks go out to Audionautics as well for help with the music. And, of course, please subscribe and review. I would love it and really appreciate it if you would do that. Until next time, thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team